Hey everyone, before we get started, I want to ask you a favor. Pop Culture Happy Hour has changed a lot in the time that it's been on, including adding me as the show's newest host. And you can really help build the future of the show if you let us know what you think right now over at npr.org/springsurvey. Yes, we want to hear from you if you've been listening for 10 years and you've seen all this change happen. We also really want to hear from you if you're new here. We want to know what you're looking for, what you're glad to see, what you think might be missing, and whatever else you want us to know. Any listener, any way you got here, head over to npr.org/springsurvey. Thank you for listening. We're listening too. In the grand tradition of movies like This Is Spinal Tap and pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping, the new Peacock series Girls 5 Eva is a silly parody of the music industry. In it, four down-on-their-luck members of a fictional late 90s girl group reunite to stage a comeback 20 years later and find that the music industry has changed a lot since then. The show features a stacked cast of musical and comedic talent, including Sarah Bareilles, Renee Elise Goldsberry, Busy Phillips, and Paula Pell. And the music's pretty catchy, too. Riding with my ladies, we now got a Mercedes, making rhymes and telling jokes like regular Wynn Brady's. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Girls 5 Eva on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away. Gonna be famous five ever.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc. Teladoc is here for you with 24/7 access to board-certified doctors who can diagnose and treat non-emergency conditions like sinus infections, allergies, rashes, and more. And Teladoc's doctors can, where authorized, call in a prescription to be filled at the pharmacy of your choice. Download the app today or visit teladoc.com/NPR.
Welcome back. Joining us is Margaret H. Willison, who is one half of the Two Bossy Dames newsletter and one third of the Appointment Television podcast. Welcome back, Margaret.
Hi, Aisha. I'm thrilled to be here.
I am thrilled to have you here, too, because I feel like we're going to have a very fun conversation about this show.
I loved it so much. So I think that's a good instinct.
Yes. Spoiler alert. We both loved it. So Girls 5 Eva is about a fictional, long-disbanded girl group from the 90s. We have Sarah Bareilles as Dawn, the de facto leader of the group who is now working in her brother's restaurant. Renee Elise Goldsberry is Wiki, the diva who is secretly broke and unemployed. Paula Pell is Gloria, a workaholic dentist who still pines for her ex-wife. And Busy Phillips is Summer, an influencer whose husband may or may not be in the closet. When the show begins, the four of them haven't connected in years and are each dealing with various midlife crises related to their families and careers. They set out to try pop stardom again with the aims of writing and releasing a new song and performing it at the iHeartRadio Jingle Ball, because, of course. Here I'll note that there is a fifth member of Girls 5 Eva, Ashley, played by Ashley Park, who viewers might recognize as Mindy from Emily in Paris. In the first episode, we learn that her character died in a freak accident and she's only seen in flashbacks or, in one especially ridiculous instance, as a hologram. Meredith Scardino, who is a writer on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, created the show, and Tina Fey is an executive producer, so there's a lot of Fey DNA in here, including some supremely broad performances, star-studded guests, and a lot of very specific jokes about New Yorkers. And of course, there are some silly songs written by Fey's husband and frequent collaborator, Jeff Richmond. So we already spoiled it, sort of, but Margaret, tell us more about what you loved about Girls 5 Eva.
So what do I love about Girls 5 Eva? So the joke density is truly incredible. And not just the density, but the joke hit rate. They string them all together and they all work really well. They are funny and they also work as character moments. And I guess this would be a fine place to play the clip that I wanted to bring, which is very short, but I think really illustrates a lot. And it's when the four surviving members of Girls 5 Eva are talking about the original contract they signed with the Svengali who, like, initially got them together.
Okay, I dug up our old agreement with Larry, and I think he used an old Ringling Brothers contract. Not even for humans. For bears.
Why did we sign it?
We were kids. We didn't know.
I really liked my signature.
You have sort of the classic out-of-left-field Fey absurdism of, like, it's not a contract for human, it's a contract for bears, and just something about, like, but it ends with, like, Busy Phillips, Summer, the hot one, having just, like, a very pure response to her own signature that I strongly identify with as a late airhead narcissist. I have my moments. And I'd say that the thing that this reminded me of the most, and anyone who follows me on social media will understand what high praise this is the 2001 movie Josie and the Pussycats, where we have the sort of female bonding aspect of the relationship between the girls in the group, but you also have that just like stinging satire of both early 2000s fashion and early 2000s style girl group, boy group pop music. So in that, that's embodied by Du Jour. In this, it's embodied by both Girls Five Eva and a whole host of other imaginary boy bands. And as someone who was the target audience for that stuff when it was first released, seeing it rendered so authentically was both touching and harrowing, which is an equal measure.
I am also squarely in the age group for this because I am someone who, when these girl groups and, well, girl groups, but a lot of boy groups and the pop stars of Britney Spears and Christina, that era, I was 12, 13, so I was smack dab in that era. Renee Elise Goldsberry, who I need to single out as being my favorite part of this show.
She's so good.
She is Jenna Maroney, but a little bit sweeter. Okay, she is very much a self-absorbed, but she also can pay attention to other people's needs in a way that Jenna Maroney never really wanted to or did. And so I appreciate that she has a little warmth to her.
And I think there is a real sense with Wiki that, like, she should have been a star.
Right.
Like, the degree of self-regard she has is not faulty. It is reflective of both her incredible stage presence and her supreme talent. This is a person who should have had her moment, and she spent the rest of her life looking for it. And, like, when are we going to get to see her find it? You get to really root for her, even when she is, like, a self-absorbed, crazy diva. Like, her invisible piano, ridiculous, but honestly also kind of beautiful and touching.
Yes, we should note that if you haven't seen it yet, which I think we're encouraging you to do, early on in the season, Wiki moves in with Dawn, and she brings in all of her personal valuables, and that includes a piano that is sometimes invisible and sometimes isn't. Which is just very, very weird. I feel like Wiki is sort of the Jerry Halliwell of the group.
Yes.
Because she is, like you said, she is the person who should have been the big star, but then didn't really become the big star that she thought she was going to be. And I think it's just such a pitch perfect performance. One of my favorite moments is a scene from Cribs. It's supposed to be Cribs.
Yes.
Let's actually listen to a little bit of it because I think it really captures just how very, very into herself she is, but also in the most charming way.
I saw on this program that Missy Elliott has a bed that looks like a Ferrari. Well, I do Missy one better by having a car that looks like a bed. It's Sealy Posturepedic for Alfa Romeo.
She's just so great. And I think it's really nice to see this collective group of all of these very talented, especially you have obviously Sarah Bareilles, who has gone from, you know, pop singer to Tony nominated. And then Renee Elise Goldsberry, of course, was in Hamilton and won the Tony for Hamilton. It's just great to see them be able to really use those chops in so many different ways. And the songs, again, are really, really just so much fun.
Yeah. And it was such an interesting mix with the cast that I sort of didn't have a good sense of what to expect when I was coming into it, because obviously I love Busy Phillips' work. I've loved her forever, but especially from Cougar Town. Paula Pell is a comic genius and a national treasure. Sarah Bareilles, I think, is an incredibly talented songwriter and performer, composer. I love Waitress. And Renee Elise Goldsberry, incredibly talented performer and, like, skilled TV actor. But they aren't people I necessarily had an immediate sense of, like, this is a group that will have chemistry. But, like, this is a group that has chemistry, and everything that's going on here clicks right into place. I was so impressed with how well Sarah Bareilles works as an actor. Like, if she's been this good at acting and being funny on camera all along, like, why have we been squandering this? Like, what were we thinking?
Well, she was in Waitress. She did star. But
we haven't really gotten to see her do a lot of screen acting. And she really, really nails it here.
Yeah.
And they all work with the material so well. And they work with one another so well. And I was completely charmed.
In addition to all of that chemistry, they also have really good sort of side characters and guest stars that work really well into the fabric of the show. I think of someone like Stephen Colbert, who pops up in one episode as Alf Music, a Swedish pop producer, kind of like Max Martin, those types of people. Anyone who made songs for Britney Spears or Christina or the Backstreet Boys back in the day. I'm curious what you think about, you know, they play at the Jingle Ball. because that is what they've been working to. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that that's how it ends. And I'm curious as to what you think about it going forward. If there were a season two, how would you like to see them explore that? Because I think it really starts to get going towards the end. To the first couple episodes, I was kind of iffy about it. I felt like it relied a little bit too much on early 2000s humor, and I wanted a bit more of the present and also just like them wrestling with the present. Mm-hmm. And I think it gets to that by the time we get to episodes four and on. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what you think about where it could go from here.
Well, what I think is really interesting is that you actually do get to see a lot of the characters sort of change and grow and shift their orientation to what they're working towards. So like Summer, the character played by Busy Phillips, has like a boy band husband who's been like her partner since they were put together by promoters to sell Noxzema. And like they go through a dramatic arc throughout the process of this. And I'm really excited to see where that takes her and how it changes how she sees herself in the group. They all go through certain parts where they recognize they were given certain roles and like, are those the roles they want to stay in? I would be interested to see that keep going. And I just really trust this writing team. Like, I'm not doing a great job of coming up with ideas for where this could go, but I couldn't have come up with most of the things in this season. It's just fascinating because it's not just funny and it's not just correct character moments for all of the people involved. There is a genuine sort of commentary on like what viral stardom is like for the people who are objects of it, right, rather than creators of it, that is resolved in a light sitcom appropriate, fully effective way. And I'm just very curious to sort of see them keep taking on subjects like that and producing just a beautiful sitcom gem.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that I appreciate the most about this is the way in which they are really able to add that layer of social commentary, specifically about them kind of looking back on the songs that they performed and their the way in which those songs are written by older men. And they objectified themselves, they promoted ideals that were not necessarily the best. And I think that especially coming on the heels of something like the documentary framing Britney Spears and the way in which we're sort of recontextualizing all of these pop stars and especially women pop stars, sure. I think it does this really well without becoming too preachy. I think sometimes
it's on the edge.
It's on the edge because I think with Faye especially,
she's so second wave feminism.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like in her work, I often get a sense of mistrust of sort of like the sex positive, I'm cooperating in my own objectification, so therefore I'm empowered by it attitude. It's just not really something she's ever trucked with.
And to be clear, like Faye is an executive producer, you know, Meredith Scardino is the creator. She's not driving this in the same way that she was driving something like 30 Rock. And there are moments in this show that remind me so much of something like the Sexy Baby episode from 30 Rock for Sexy Baby Voice.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm going to talk like this because you think it's sexy and I do this for the men. And I love those moments. I think that's when it hits the notes between it being something that I think is progressive and but also edgy at the same time and not too preachy. And I love those moments. And I think this show is at its best when it does that. It's also at its best, I think, again, when there are just these very, and I realize this is very coastal elite stuff, but this very New Yorker moments. I got to shout out New York Lonely Boy.
New York Lonely Boy.
Performed by the Milk Carton Kids, the indie rock band.
New York Lonely Boy. His pants are always spiffy. Only sibling is the city.
It is so perfect. And the way it builds up throughout that entire episode, it had moments of, for me, again, I'm thinking of Tina Fey, and I have to be, but I'm thinking of something like Pinot Noir from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I was laughing throughout the entire time. This is exactly what I want. This is the kind of stuff that I love.
The way that that's managed throughout the episode is great, and the song itself is great. I always think some of the most memorable stuff from Kimmy Schmidt and from 30 Rock are the goofy songs that he made up. And here, like, they really, really get a chance to shine, and they're both extremely catchy and just, like, perfectly done. The theme throughout has, like, girls five Eva, three gather, so where they're always upping the number to sort of create a sense of even more specialness, and it ends, what are you waiting, five?
Gonna be famous forever, cause forever's too short, so what are you waiting, five?
And every time, I just, it gets me every time. It's the dumbest joke, and it's so good. And I just feel like the songs throughout are sort of peppered with that, and he's playing with a lot of different musical styles, and they're all great. And it's just really cool to see that kind of artistic collaboration between partners, especially when it produces such remarkable results.
We want to know what you think about Girls 5 Eva. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Margaret, it was such a pleasure to have you here.
Aisha, I was delighted.
So before we go, just another reminder that you can help us build the future of pop culture happy hour over at npr.org/springsurvey. I can honestly tell you, we still talk about things we've learned from research like this when we plan whatever's coming up next. And whether you're brand new to the show or you've been with us since 2010, it matters to us what you think. So head over to npr.org/springsurvey and give us your thoughts. And we will see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about the new film, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
I'm Yoe Shaw.
I'm Kia Miakonatis.
We're the hosts of the NPR podcast, Invisibilia.
You can think of Invisibilia kind of like a sonic blacklight.
When you switch us on, you will hear surprising and intimate stories.
Stories that help you notice things in your world that maybe you didn't see before.
Listen to the Invisibilia podcast from NPR.